I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars Episode N with my colleague and co-host and co-pilot David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. And we're very pleased to blast off in our imaginations to the ISS, the wonderful International Space Station, which I think of as beachfront property times a trillion, with Bill Harwood. William Harwood is the CBS News reporter. I read very carefully to follow the goings and comings around ISS and all the other scientific endeavors these days, but in particular ISS, because I'm looking at the 21st century, the part I'll see and the part I won't see, and trying to imagine what shape the ISS is in right now after these years of success. Bill, a very good evening to you. Your report most recently is that a Russian Progress cargo ship lifted from Kazakhstan to the International Space Station to deliver 2.9 tons of propellant, water, and crew supplies. In other words, a resupply mission. Pretty ordinary stuff. But what is the state of the ISS today? Is it on short-term worry? Is it healthy? The repair of the arm recently is what interested me. I don't know about all the moving parts these years and whether they're given a bill of health by the participating Roscosmos and NASA and other space programs. Good evening to you, Bill.
And good evening to you, John. Those are all very, very good questions. One of the hallmarks of this program is their long-range planning. They plan for components to fail. They've made sure from day one that they have enough spare parts on board that when things do fail, they've got ready replacements to put in to install. And, of course, that took on a significance back in 2011 when the last shuttle program mission ended. They had to make sure there are enough supplies up there in the absence of the shuttle to make it through until U.S. cargo ships were flying once again to restock it. And they've done a great job of this. The station, I think, is in remarkably good shape when you consider that it's been, you know, they started building this in 1998. It's been permanently manned with rotating crews, men and women, since 2000. And it really runs along like a fine Swiss watch. They have individual components that fail from time to time. They have spares on board that they can replace either with the robot arm, as you mentioned, or during spacewalks, like two we've had recently. We got one more coming up Friday. And it's in really excellent health. And when you think about it, they're trying to operate this through at least through 2024. That is the currently approved plan for space station. NASA would like to operate it through the end of the decade if they can, meaning all the way out to 2028 perhaps. That's still TBD, but the plan right now is all the way through 2024. They think they have the spares. They think they have the expertise to keep the system running that long at least. And so far, so good. Nothing major hanging out there on the horizon that might threaten all that.
David?
Hi, Bill. Is there any way to detect a difference in part failure or durability between the Russian sector and the American?
You know, the systems are so different, it's really hard to do that. The Russians use a very it's straightforward technology. It's very tough. It's very robust. It's equipment they've been flying for years and years and years, and they tend to launch systems and then refine them over time without necessarily, you know, going back to the drawing board and coming up with something brand new. The U.S. side, remember, that's where the big solar arrays are, all the complicated rotating machinery, way more power on the U.S. side for science. The experiments are way more sophisticated and more numerous. And I don't have the insight into the Russian hardware that we have into the NASA hardware, but my sense of it is their equipment is very robust. It's relatively straightforward, and it holds up pretty well. They ship up spare parts just like we do. It's just that the U.S. side, and when I say U.S., remember, I'm including in that the European Space Agency, the Canadians, and the Japanese, because that U.S. segment involves equipment from all of those countries. That's a different kettle of fish altogether, much more complicated, much more detailed, and requires much more in the way of support and spare parts.
I go to your report on the attention to the robot arm, the space station robot arm. This is a spacewalk by Commander Randy Bresnik and Flight Engineer Mark Vandehei. Your report shows it very straightforward. They were out there to lubricate the new arm mechanism. Nothing irregular about this, and that's what interested me. Do they know when this is going to need attention? Do they do routine checks? Because there's so many intricate details in the system. I remember the water water system at one time. There were questions about it, and they're always concerned about the possibility of having to evacuate if there's going to be an incident in space. So it's as if they live inside an equipment that needs constant maintenance. That's what it reads like, Bill. Is that what it's like to live there?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, the space station certainly requires constant maintenance, but remember that every component in the station, from gyroscopes to the power subsystems and all those myriad components, they all have a design life before they're put in place. So in the case of the robot arm, you know, the design life on that that wrist that we talked about that got replaced recently in a spacewalk was about 15 years. They knew that going in. It's been operating for more than 16 years. So they knew the time was coming that it was going to need some work. The other thing I think that's hard for people to realize is virtually every component on the station is tied into the telemetry system. And so on the arm, for example, they knew they needed to do something because they were noticing that it took more current to make the grapple mechanism close than it used to, meaning it's getting stiffer. You know, it's not working the way it was designed to work. You can see that in the telemetry, which means you can then go off and plan how best to make the repair. They had a spare on board, of course, and there's another spare down on the ground they can launch later if they need it. So I think the telemetry, the vital signs that they're constantly monitoring down on Earth, really gives them a good heads up when a piece of equipment might be nearing failure. And, of course, when it does fail, they see that as well and can take pretty quick action.
David?
Do they make these spare parts? Are any of them sort of mass-made, or is everything a one-off? So if they need yet another arm, they'd have to individually manufacture it? Nothing is made off on an assembly line, for example?
Well, no, but in the case of the arm, it's made up of seven joints, which gives it a huge degree of freedom, but most of those joints are interchangeable. So they have spares for the two end mechanisms. That's the part that grips onto something. And then the joints in between, they can swap out as needed. So you don't have to replace the whole arm. You just replace components. Now, there are things that simply can't be replaced like that. For example, the big solar arrays on the U.S. side. There are no spare solar arrays, you know, that you can launch up to the station. And so there are some components that simply have to work. But most of the equipment, no, they can get backups if they aren't already there. And in most cases, they're already there.
The ISS, it's a premier object of the 20th century, now here in the 21st century. And its life is, we can speculate how much longer it's going to live. Is this now understood, Bill, as the predicate for what other space stations will look like, how they will perform? There's much debate now about the cislunar station that they want to build sometime in the next decade or so.
That's right, John. You know, the gateway, they call it the lunar gateway. I don't think the design of the current station will necessarily move forward to you'll see something that looks like it around the moon. But the key point here is that the systems that make the International Space Station work, the life support system, which recycles the urine and condensate on board for drinking water, the electrical power systems, how those are distributed and managed, those systems will absolutely be replicated when you go to the moon or even on to Mars. And I think that's one of the great bits of value about the International Space Station. You know, the science is one thing. That's the presumed reason you built it in the first place. But I think more important than the science is the knowledge that's been gained by getting these high-tech systems to work properly and to do it internationally. In other words, you've got, you know, a Russian control center, you got one in Europe, there's one in Japan, there's one in Houston. All of these guys working together to make this project run, because I'm convinced that any major exploration of the moon with astronauts or Mars for sure is going to be an international endeavor. And so I think the mechanical part of the station that they've been able to perfect and make work is one key component of that. And the other is the management of it, being able to work across time zones and boundaries to keep something this complex operating.
David?
Bill, we're seeing the possible viability of private space stations entering the arena. So are these lessons learned on the ISS applicable to, say, an Axiom station or Bigelow, or would their systems be radically different?
I think the systems would be radically different. You're right. You know, they just announced earlier this week that, as you mentioned, the Bigelow Aerospace Company is partnering up with United Launch Alliance to put a big inflatable module around the moon that could have people on board. Those are going to be different. But I think, again, the subsystems are what make these things work. You know, it's the ability to recycle water, to keep the air fresh, and then the transportation segment to get the supplies up to the astronauts. Those are going to be very similar to the way the station works. So I think the lessons learned on the International Station, Space Station are absolutely critical, even to these commercial ventures that aren't attempting to be, you know, a complex national science lab, which is what our space station is. Even if you're just trying to put a small habitat in orbit around the moon, you've still got to have those key systems, life support, you know, propulsion, power. And I think the lessons learned from station for those guys is absolutely applicable.
Bill Harwood, William Harwood of CBS Space News, David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.